Hello and welcome to the Dune Minute Podcast, your place to dive deep, minute by minute, into the cinematic adaptation of Frank Herbert's World of Dune. I'm one of your hosts, John.
And I am Zach.
And we are back with another episode, a Tuesday episode, as it were.
Mm-hmm.
We're talking about Minute 96 of Dune Part 1.
Yesterday,
we left off with the death of Leto Atreides and Paul and Jessica's reactions to finding the ducal signet amongst all of the other tools inside the Fremkit that Dr. Yue left them. Real quick, huge shout out to Oscar Isaac and his performance in this.
Lovely. Magnificent.
Fantastic role. I think we talked about it a little bit in a previous episode about how Oscar Isaac kind of came into the role. But real quick, just to kind of recap, he heard that Denis Villeneuve was working on Dune and kind of putting it together, and he just emailed him and said, "Hey, I'm a really big fan of you and of the books.
Yeah.
So if there's anything that you can think of for me, I'd like to do it."
How about one of the central characters?
How about arguably one of the most important characters for both part one and part two? Because honestly, without Leto's death, I don't think we would get nearly as much as we do.
No, I don't think so either. So, I mean, God, killed it. Just absolutely killed it in the role.
Yep.
Has he ever worked with Villeneuve before? I can't think of a time.
I don't know.
Who did Ex Machina? Was that Nolan?
No, Ex Machina wasn't Nolan, but... So, while we're talking about Ex Machina, supposedly, according to the Art and Soul of Dune,
not sponsored,
Denis Villeneuve was a very big fan of Oscar Isaac's role in that movie.
Amazing.
Yeah.
That whole movie's
very
great.
Very different from Leto, because Leto's not as much of a psychopath.
I think that
you could argue that Leto's not a psychopath.
Yeah.
We've talked about this before. You could argue Leto's probably one of the only like
true good characters.
True good characters. Yeah.
I agree.
He's definitely like the most pure,
well-intentioned. We'll call it that.
Yeah, well-intentioned is a good good phrase. But yeah. Denis Villeneuve had seen Oscar Isaac and Ex Machina and was like, oh shit, like this guy's real fucking good. So
I think Ex Machina was probably the first movie that I recognized Oscar Isaac in, being like, oh, that guy. Yeah. I really like him.
Cause saw him in Ex Machina, and then I'd recognized him in Star Wars. Cause I was like, oh, that's the guy from Ex Machina.
Oh, okay. See, I was backwards, cause I didn't watch the Star Wars movies when they came out.
We went to opening night for,
but he looked a lot different in Star Wars than he did in Ex Machina to me.
Sure.
So I don't think I put those two together.
All right.
Great performance of Leto. Sad to see him go.
Yep.
I don't think we get any flashbacks or anything like that. This is just it.
Dune is, all flash forward with maybe something that might happen. We don't know yet. Yeah. Who knows?
Yeah. So the minute starts with Leto, who is now very dead.
Unfortunately.
We get to see a kind of a zoom out shot of the dining room where everything happened. And it's, like we said yesterday, it's just dark and gray and dead goons laying everywhere. And the Baron, however, is nowhere to be seen.
Nope.
Amongst the bodies. We get a shot up to the bull's head for dramatic effect. I thought the lighting here did a fair amount of heavy lifting. It's overcast and a lot of shadows. You can barely see it because the Atreides, there's only two of them now.
Yep.
Well, two and a half if you count Aaliyah.
And at this point, Paul has explained to the viewers that Jessica is pregnant.
Yep.
Even though Jessica barely knew herself.
The Atreides are almost out. The light is almost extinguished on the Atreides. And I thought it was a nice little bit of lighting, storytelling.
Sure.
Casting so much shadow over the bull.
I kind of like that with the way that Leto is dead in the chair. Like, he is still looking up at the bull.
Yeah. Probably one of his last visions, last things he saw.
Probably. Yeah. Just like his dad.
Yeah, exactly. we don't linger on the bull for too long, though. Nope. It's just a few seconds. And we smash cut to pretty much a new location. We haven't seen the spot before in the movie.
Correct.
Still in Arakeen, but just like on the outskirts of the city, it looks like.
Yeah. So when we first saw Arakeen, you know, you were talking about how in the books, there's no shield wall. It's just surrounded by, you know, these super steep, super jagged ass mountains.
Yeah.
We are on those super steep, super jagged ass mountains.
Yep. Yep.
There's a lone dark cloaked figure just standing on that cliffside of these jagged mountains and stuff, standing in front of what I would assume is some kind of like temple entrance. We don't really know.
No, we don't know what it is, but it's impressive.
It looks really cool.
Huge.
It's just kind of like carved into the side of the mountain too. Like you see with a lot of in our own world, settlements in the desert.
Yep.
Thinking specifically about like Petra and Jordan.
Sure. Sure.
Which if you think about how much work that has to be to just carve a mountain.
Yeah, that's insane.
Like not even like super detailed carving like you have in Petra, because like here it's not super detailed. I mean, there's an archway and there's like some like smaller holes in the wall on the side of the archway, but it's not like super ornate shit either.
Those holes in the wall look like, cause you see those in a lot of like desert settlements and things.
Probably just like a ventilation thing.
I tried to look and see what those were, and that definitely came up, ventilation. They also said like holes for scaffolding. Like if you need to do like repairs on the wall, like put planks and be able to stand up there. Or put posts and planks across them to be able to stand up. It could just be windows, you know, I don't know. Because if you look at the comparison for those holes and the bot or the person that we see, it feels like the person could fit inside one of those holes. So they're kind of big.
Maybe.
That's just a very quick comparison that I did with my eyes. So I could be wrong there. But it's very interesting. We've got the big long windows cut out at the bottom, like very similar to the ones what we've seen in the palace itself.
Yep. I'm gonna assume it's a ventilation thing.
Sure.
But you know, if you're a desert archaeology expert, yell at us. Let us know that we're stupid and wrong. But who is this figure but someone we already know?
Yep.
It's Dr. Kynes.
She's back. Back again.
She's back. Shady's back. Tell a friend. And she's standing on the cliffside just looking over Arakeen as it, you know, is smoldering. It is very clearly daytime now, as you know, we can all see, but you know, the city is still burning. You can see, you know, bits and pieces of, you know, buildings just kind of blown up and leveled and everything, and she doesn't really,
she looks sad. I mean, she's
there's nothing she can do but, you know, just kind of stand there. And you know, the one thing that I wanted to talk about too was, you know, some of the music when we were looking at the Atreides bull. You know, a sad music starts to like, or a sad soft music starts, but by the time we're at the point where Kynes is, you know, looking over Arakeen and the destruction and everything, it's kind of escalated to a full on lamentation and stuff.
Yeah. Well, that's what I mean. The subtitles start to say dramatic lamentation music starts.
Yeah.
And that's quite literally what she's doing. She's lamenting.
Yep.
In this moment.
We see tears on her face and everything too, you know, and I have a note in here too, you know, her tears are not for the Atreides, but it's for her own people.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
Because spoilers, she is Fremen.
Yep.
As we've talked about on multiple occasions already.
Yeah. One other thing, like during this shot, and maybe you're about to say this, so you get a good look. This is probably the clearest that we see the Harkonnen attack ship.
Yes.
Off in the background.
I do have notes about the tumor ship.
Yep. That's what it was.
The gangrenous tumor.
So we saw it like just in flashes during the attack scene a couple weeks ago. But this is the first time that we get a good look at those just bulbous tumors all over the ship.
It almost looks like a city structure on top of the ship.
Yeah. Yeah.
The closest thing like that I could compare it to is like in Star Wars, I think it's the Super Star Destroyer is the one that looks like it has a city on top of it as well.
I couldn't tell you. I don't know.
There's so many like classifications for the different Star Destroyers and stuff, but yeah, it kind of,
it ain't the 77 one. I ain't buying that. All right. Not my Star Destroyer.
But yeah, like it's a fucking huge ship that we see in there. But our lemonade city.
Lemonade stand.
Yeah. Dr. Kynes is just out there lemonade, but it's like the D is backwards. Yeah. 25 cents. She's just trying to raise some money for
they got a lot to rebuild. Yeah.
Hey, every penny counts.
She's distracted. She gets distracted by something off to her right.
Yes. And it is the familiar humming, buzzing sound of an ornithopter.
Yep.
We see an ornithopter kind of approach pretty quickly.
Specifically a Harkonnen ornithopter.
It is. Yeah. It's a Harkonnen ornithopter that kind of swoops in pretty quickly, kicks up a shitload of dust as it's landing.
Yeah.
I can just imagine Leah Kynes just being like, what the fuck?
It's already dusty enough out here without that.
Exactly. But yeah, it settles on the cliffside near Kynes, and then we just hear a familiar voice just yell out,
Kynes!
It's Duncan, and he's got both of his blades drawn.
Yep.
And, you know, you kind of see Kynes shift herself a little bit.
And she pulls out
her Chris knife, too. And she's ready to fucking go.
Who do you think would win in this moment? This is genuinely a toss-up in my mind. Like, if they started... Because
Duncan says that the Fremen would have killed him.
Yeah.
They fight like demons.
And he's looking rough for wear now.
He's a little rough for wear. We never get any indication as to Kynes's, you know, combat abilities, though.
I think it's a safe assumption that she's trained, maybe not like full combat or whatever that looks like for Fremen, but, you know, she has some combat training.
Yeah.
I think as most Fremen do.
I'm gonna give it a toss up.
My money's on Kynes on this one.
It could go either way.
I think she's rested. Duncan's a great fighter, no doubt about it.
Yeah.
But just with everything that he's gone through in the past 24 hours, I'm gonna put my money on Kynes.
Okay. I'll tell you this: any other Fremen that we see fighting, no fucking way. Duncan's getting his ass murdered.
Yeah. Yep.
Like if it was Duncan versus Jaimus.
Absolutely. No question.
Not even a question.
Yeah. Duncan loses that one every day.
But Kynes' only response after pulling out the Chris knife, and she does so in such a way that Duncan doesn't see it. Right. You know, it's kind of behind her back or whatever.
She's got like a back of the...
it's like a back of the thigh kind of...
Yeah. Or like the holster. Small of your back sheath.
Yeah.
Something like that. Cool place to keep a knife.
Yeah. And her response is, it's not safe for you here.
Very considerate of her.
Yes. And he asks her, will you tell the great houses of the Landsraad how we were betrayed?
Yeah, yeah. No introductions, no nothing. Just aggression asking, will you tell them this?
Yeah.
This is one of those.
This is the only time that we see Kynes and Duncan interact with each other, because Duncan wasn't on.
He wasn't on the. Yeah, that's right.
The flight out to the deep desert.
That is true.
Now, I'm not sure if that's true for the books, but it's true for the movie.
I think it's true for the books too.
Yeah.
Yeah. As at least as far as I can remember. Yeah. I don't recall any other meetings with them, possibly during Drunken Duncan's little moment in the book. I can't really remember who all was there at that, but that was really close to the ornithopter ride to the desert. So yeah, possibly then.
Duncan's out in the desert getting DUIs and shit and harking an ornithopter. Grand Theft Auto, DUI. Duncan's breaking a lot of laws right now.
How fun would a GTA Arrakis game be? That would be cool.
Yeah.
I might actually play that.
Well, speaking of games, Dune Awakening, we got some gameplay footage for that. I know video games are not your thing, but I did want to talk about it a little bit because Gamescom was this past week.
Yeah. Talk about it. How's it look? Thoughts?
So the developers of Dune Awakening also developed this game called Conan Exile, which was just kind of like a survival game and everything. It was never one that I played, so I can't like say from firsthand experience. I know that, you know, some people really liked it and some people really didn't. And I know that the game had like really accurate dick physics.
Come again?
Yep. Really accurate dick physics where you could just like get naked and jump around and your dick would flop around and stuff. That was a big selling point.
Okay.
I don't know if dick physics will exist in Dune, but
that's a field of study that I haven't really heard too much about.
Well, I'll send you some videos.
Oh no. okay. Thank you though.
It looks interesting. They're building it out as like an MMO kind of game where they want to, you know, have people working together for base building and survival stuff on Arrakis. And it seems that, you know, you can pledge your loyalty to different factions. One of them being the Harkonnen is one of the ones that they talked about and everything. There's a lot of creative liberties that are being taken.
Okay.
And all the decisions that are being made are being done so with the blessing of the Herbert family, but also, you know, it's that Brian.
Yeah. Like, so that does not give.
No, it doesn't give it a lot of credence to like,
in terms of like canon, it's sticking to canon.
Yeah. For instance, like a lot of people have laser guns.
Oh,
which not a lot of people necessarily do in the actual canon itself. So, but also you have to,
it's a game. You got to have weapons and stuff. So
I'm interested. I've signed up for, you know, beta access and stuff whenever that will come. But I'll want to get into it and just kind of play around with it a little bit. And I've got some, you know, Calf, who was our lovely guest that we had a couple weeks ago, is also one of my gaming buddies and stuff. And, you know, he and I have talked about playing it a little bit. And one of our other listeners who we haven't had as a guest, but is another good friend of mine, is also one of my gaming buddies and stuff. And we kind of talked about it. He's much more of like a survival game player. So we'll kind of poke around a little bit, see what we think. And when it actually comes out, whenever the fuck that is, we'll report back on that. That little aside. So the Landsraad we've talked a little bit about before.
Yeah. Yeah.
In some very early episodes and stuff, just kind of when we were establishing like the hierarchy.
Yeah.
I think we were talking about the Landsraad when we were talking about the episode where Shaddam IV of House Carino was being introduced during the Herald of the Change ceremony.
Yes. That's where it first gets mentioned. I believe they say
I don't think the Landsraad is mentioned. I think you and I just talked about the structure because you have the Emperor, but
they say like representatives of the Spacing Guild and maybe they just say the Great Houses or something.
Members of the Imperial Court.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. That's right. Yeah.
Which I would assume there are representatives from each of the Great Houses in the Landsraad in the Imperial Court or maybe not.
Some at least.
Yeah.
I don't think a Harkonnen representative would be there.
I mean, maybe not. Either way, the Landsraad is a collection of all of the largest houses, which then in turn have their own fealty structure beneath them.
Yeah, it's almost like a senate structure
It's very feudal.
Yeah, but not like democratically elected Senate.
No.
It's if you are a great house, because there's, you know, house major and house minors within this universe. And that's done purely on like the distinction is, you know, how much do you contribute to the Imperium is what defines
resources or men or.
Right. Right. So that is one of the major factors that that defines whether your family is a major house or a minor house. Major houses are afforded, you know, stock options into CHOM. So they get, you know, seats.
Money.
Yeah. They get seats on the director, the board of directors for the CHOM company. And that's like a big, motivating factor for a lot of stuff in the books is like this, seeking of directorship, within the company. So it's, you know, we've not really touched on a lot of the economic policies of Dune.
Because frankly, they're not present in the movie because all you need to know for the movie is spice is super important for travel.
Yeah.
And without it, humanity is stupid as fuck.
Yep. Yep. So what's important here though, is Duncan is asking Kynes, will you tell the Lansdrad? See, I've reverted back to the fucking Lynch pronunciations again. The Lansdrad, about what's happening here. It's interesting that he doesn't say, will you report back to the Emperor what's happening here? Because the Emperor...
Emperor knows.
Well, yeah, but the Emperor is part of the Lansdrad.
Yeah.
Like he's another governing, you know, portion of this this body. If I'm remembering correctly, like when they set up this organization... the Emperor, you know, this was probably a number of emperors past, but did not give the ruling house like an overwhelming majority within the organization, within like this, you know, quote unquote Senate, gave him something like 52%.
Yeah.
So still a majority stakeholder.
It's half plus one, basically.
Yeah. But not anything that would negate the influence of other houses. So it's still a, you know, yes, the Emperor runs things, but with enough, it puts him in a position where he's still beholden to the other houses,
right,
to do good, or they could oust him.
Yeah. One thing we talked about too is Leto's popularity with his men. Mm-hmm. And that he was very loved by all of his men, but it seems that for most of the Lansdrad, that popularity also extended to them as well.
Yeah.
Harkonnen's obviously not being, you know, super big fans, but.
Yeah. I mean, that's really the impetus behind this whole thing. His influence.
And Duncan knows this too, which is why he's like, hey, go fucking tell these people like shit's popping off here.
Well, so we'll talk about this more tomorrow, but I don't think Duncan knows at this precise moment everything.
No, but he knows enough to say the Harkonnens have attacked the Atreides and slaughtered us all.
Yeah.
I realize that we're moving into tomorrow discussion and everything. Yeah. But so we're
let's
here. Do that.
Let's
so, yeah, let's get
to tomorrow.
Yeah. Let's do that. If you want to yell at us for just abruptly cutting off tomorrow's context in today's episode. I mean, I guess you can, but it's our podcast. You can reach out to us on Instagram at the Dune Minute. You can find us on Twitter at Dune Minute, and you can email DuneMinute@gmail.com. Otherwise, we'll be back for another episode tomorrow for a Wednesday episode, because that's how the week works. And we'll see you then.
All right, cool. See you then.